I could read your mind, love, what a tale your thoughts could tell. Just like a paperback novel, the kind of drugs.
Howdy, everybody. Welcome to Need to Read, reading for fun, profit, and understanding. Why do we call it Need to Read? Because obviously, reading is the basic skill that we use for all of the rest of our knowledge and skills. Without reading, there's no way to communicate with each other except, there's no way to communicate with each other except face to face. And reading and writing is what makes it possible to pass the knowledge from one generation to the next. Is also what makes possible our ability to understand and interpret what is being said, and whether it be true or not true, or it has some ulterior motive in the way that it is presented. So the reading for fun, profit, and understanding is the basic element of education. You read for fun because it is natural human tendency to want to have vicarious experiences. And then you read for profit, for that's for learning things so you can make good in your life. And understanding is so that you can decipher what is moral and what is not moral, what will have lasting value for eternity, and what is lost simply here on this earth in its transitory nature. We all know we're going to die, and we all know that the hope of all conscious beings is that this mortal death is not the end of our existence. And for that, we trust and honor God, our creator and author of all good in this universe. And that is what this show really is dedicated to. Reading is probably one of the most, like I've said, most fundamental, important thing to our ability to educate ourselves and to pass that knowledge on to future generations. I was listening to Dennis Prager the other day, and he was, I caught a snippet of his show. He was saying that he hears people say that, well, their concept of morality and what's right and wrong comes from their life experience, what they've experienced. And he was saying, so here you are, 40, 45, 60, 65 years old, and in those years, you've experienced enough to understand what the essence of morality is. And he said, that isn't enough to base any kind of sense on. Dennis Prager bases his sense of morality and religion and whatnot on his study of the subject, not just his life experience, but his study of it. And his study comes from what? It comes from the writings of others. Those that have thought about it, pondered about it, contemplated, and wrote those down. Some who may have even actually had divine inspiration. Others who may have had inspiration simply from their own dedicated contemplation of the matters and reading of others as well. Do you think that the great minds of yesteryear, Socrates and whatnot, do you think they didn't read anything but what they wrote? No, they referred to many things besides what they wrote. So, if you'd like to share in this experience and tell me things that you have read that you might think that other people would like to read, whether it be for fun or profit or understanding, call us up at 602-277-5369 or toll free from anywhere, 866-536-1100, and give me something you've read that you maybe like someone else to read. Of course, I could sit here and for this entire hour, I could name authors, books and authors, and I would not have enough time to read all the ones that I have written down in my papers, which is only a small portion of the books that I have in my personal library. And that personal library is being built for the sole purpose of passing that knowledge on to others. I've read so much in my life, and there's so much out there to read, I don't really have any need to hoard these books for myself and think, oh, well, these are my books. I want to share them with everybody. I don't want to give them to people or even let people borrow them, because almost inevitably you don't see the books again. But I will sell certain books, and I will certainly let a person come in and use my books. And that is, of course, what I've been talking about the last, since I come back on the air, since I was off the air for that long time. I've been talking about my charity, and as just to give you a progress report, I'm receiving mail in the name of my charity, but I have yet to receive something from the Corporation Commission for my official nonprofit corporate papers. And I failed all last week to call them. I got to admit, I am very recalcitrant, and I am somewhat lazy, and sometimes I'm forgetful. As a matter of fact, a lot of times I'm forgetful. So I'll try to call them again this week, find out why they haven't sent me my official papers, so that I can establish the bank account and set up the GoFund for hopefully people who will be interested in helping me establish the academy, the foster child organization that goes and somehow helps foster children in their studies, whether it be whether they would come to a class that we are holding, and I would hope to have some of those, or if we would go to we would go to their location and do personal tutoring for kids. And having the vast array of literature and nonfiction and school books, I can help anybody, any age. Any person that's having a problem that wants to expand their reading and their ability to read, I can certainly help them and coach them and give them books that will help them. Simple books that have powerful messages. And then later, as your skill develops, more complicated books, you know, guys like Melville and Conrad and other guys whose sentences tend to be paragraphs long with parentheses and other stuff involved. And you gotta read the sentence, you gotta read the paragraph long sentence three times to make sure you follow the thought process and digested the different parentheses that it guides in it that you know qualify certain parts of the story, or whatever the narrative. So it's really reading really is quite an adventure, and I'm gonna read a couple of things that I've written. I'm gonna tell you a story of these guys on a sailboat who sailed to Catalina. And on the way back, they ran into some very, very high seas. And how they ended up finally getting back and just what, that's a little story that I wrote that I'll read it. And if nobody else calls and interjects anything and leaves me to myself, I will probably read a little portion of this story again that I read last week or the week before, I don't remember which. Well, I didn't read it too well because I couldn't read my own writing. But in the meantime, I've reviewed it so I can read my own writing, and I'll read it to you again about Gus and Bobby and You Can't Get Lost in Phoenix. And the story of Can't Get Lost in Phoenix is inspired by the fact that Phoenix proper, when I first came here in 1969, which Northern Avenue was like the boonies. You know, if you drove all the way to Northern Avenue, there wasn't hardly anything there, but there was a drive-in there. It was called the Northern Drive-In. So we went to the Northern Drive, and it was always like real dark out there because you left the city lights. So during that time, I've noticed, and all through the years I've been here in Phoenix, I've noticed that the city is laid out in a square, and it's just a mile between major streets, and the avenues are on the west side, and the streets are on the east side, and the places and the ways and the lanes and the other stuff all are on their proper sides. And if you just kind of know where you're, you know, north, south, east, and west, and you know some major streets, you just cannot get lost in Phoenix. Even if you're in one of these neighborhoods that Gus and Bobby would find themselves in as they cruised around looking for scrap, where these neighborhoods wind around and turn in circles, and an east and west, east-west street ends up going north for a while, and da-da-da-da. Still, if you can just come out to a regular street, see where you are, west, east, north, south, you can find your way. But when you get into, when I'm speaking of between the years of 69 and maybe late 70s, there was still quite a bit of distance between the cities of Phoenix and Tempe. There was actually a barren area. There was no city at all. You left Phoenix and you didn't arrive into Tempe until you got into near Mill Avenue. And that was, but when you get into Tempe, they don't like the streets all laid out in a grid because it isn't as pretty. So they make these streets all curved and going around in circles and you get lost. You thought you were going north and west. Because you're going north, and you end up going back east or something, and then to go back north where you thought you were going, Well, the thing is that you're supposed to just follow the road, because it does end you back up there. But when you're used to being able to just go east, north, south, or west, you know, like that, all these curved around streets just mess you up. And I never really have liked driving anywhere in the valley except Phoenix, because I can always find my way around. But I always get turned around when I get into these other outlying areas. And now, of course, it's all combined in one big, giant, huge metropolis, kind of like Southern California. But we'll be right back after this break, and I'll read you some stories. I'll hopefully take some calls, and if not, I'll just continue to talk about reading for fun, profit, and understanding.
Every highway to see better days, the morning after blue.
Welcome back. I neglected at the beginning of the show to welcome and hopefully and have the listeners of American Heroes, the show on before this show on KFNX 1100. We welcome you, those listeners to this show. Hopefully you'll stay tuned. I find the American Hero show to be an excellent show. He's got some excellent guests on there. The author of, I forget what the name of the book was, something Uncommon Valor maybe. And he was a fighter pilot in Vietnam. And last week, he had that guy that was a B-17 pilot, and also a Phantom pilot in Vietnam, or maybe it was Korea. I think it was Vietnam as well. He was 96, and he was on the American Heroes Warriors show last week. And so I encourage everyone to listen to that show at 2, and stay tuned to Need to Read, Reading for Fun, Profit, and Understanding at 3. And I want to remind you also, our phone number is 602-277-5369 or 866-536-1100. Call into the show. Give me your comments, your assessment of my performance, or whether you consider the show too boring and you want to spice it up. I'd certainly appreciate that. And right now, for you, in the audience who have sailed, or those who enjoy stories about sailing, and or even fantasize about the adventures of sailing, though you may not have ever done it. This is a story about some people who sailed to Catalina Island from LA Harbor or Long Beach, probably, and they stayed late in the afternoon and decided to sail back late in the afternoon, only it got dark quicker than they thought, and the seas began to rise, and there was quite a storm. As a matter of fact, they're very lucky to have gotten back safely. The little sloop was enveloped in the wind-driven spray as it sat poised on the crest of the surging wave. For a terrifying moment, she sat motionless. Then the bow dipped, and the brave little sloop dove into the canyon between the waves. The tiller man was not inexperienced, and he guided the boat down into the trough, reckoning just where to point the bow to race up the side of the surging wave, coming up to swallow over the top of them. He signaled his mate at the halyard line, first one finger, then two. The man at the rope interpreted the tiller man and drew mightily at the boom, which strained back with equal strength, though now, with the wind weaker down inside the bottom of the storm's canyon, the ship nosed up into and shot up the side of the bellowing wave, and to perch once more, briefly, motionless atop the raging, boiling sea. Each time the boat crested and stood high on the wave, high enough for the man at the halyard, who was inexperienced, to be transfixed by the mighty sea's raging, terrifying beauty. And each time he could see the lights along the distant shore, beacons of hope and safety. Each time the lights were extinguished by the fearful plunge into the depths of the storm, the man prayed to see them again at the top of the next monster of water, that those lights would not abandon them. And in fact, they did not. Throughout the night, the boat fought the waves, plunging down to the deep troughs. I'm coming back up again to perch on the top of the waves, and overcome by the blowing mist of water. And keeping those lights. Every time they came up to the top, he saw the lights again. And every time they went down, he thought, God, will I see him again? And finally, they came out of the storm. And they came into the marina. And they found that they were not where they thought they were going. They were 150 miles south and had been blown or guided somehow out of the storm, which had wrecked the marina that they had debarked from on their trip to Catalina. And so by some fate, they were blown away from the catastrophe that would have awaited them if they had tried to come back to the port that they had taken off from, and ended up 100 miles south in San Diego. And that is a true story. And if anybody has any comments about sailing, which is a great thing, I learned to tack and to come about and to pull the halyard line in. It was a lot of fun learning. I didn't do a lot of it, but I did learn a little bit about sailing. And, of course, having read so many stories of sailing, I have a pretty good idea how it was. And thank God I've never been in a storm like that. But the person that told me the story, really, they said that they could not believe that they got out of it, and then they had ended up 100 miles south, and that, in fact, the storm had destroyed the marina that they had taken off from in Long Beach, and they probably might very well have gotten lost at sea if they had not gotten blown to the south or been guided to the south by some benevolent power. Now, also on today's show, I might just run off some books that I've recommended in the past, and hopefully somebody will call up at 602-277-5369 or 866-536-1100 and recommend to me a book that I haven't read, or I may have read it and they've enjoyed it, so maybe you would like other people to have the same kind of experience that you had in reading the book. That is why we recommend books to each other, that there's some kind of a curious experience in it. It possibly and most likely comes from our nature, but it has its roots in the storytelling of the people around the campfire at the end of the day after they had eaten their fill of the hunt, and the hunters and the others got up to tell the stories of the hunt and other experiences. And they sat under the incredible, brilliant stars and just contemplated life experiences. And from that on, obviously, people wanted to relate the same stories over and over again. And some people might have wanted to say, well, listen, the story changes all the time. I like it the same. And maybe they wrote it down. And that's how Reading for Fun, Profit, and Understanding got started. You got guys who want to tell a story to somebody else, and so they write it down, and that story is passed on and on. Like the story of the boy who cried wolf. Now, I forget who that's by, Aesop or somebody. But, I mean, it's a metaphor, obviously, and we use it down through the ages. It's really incredible how those things so affect us, and rightly so, because of our own experiences, of our own efforts, we have so little to offer, yet collectively, the human race is able to proliferate and create great things. And we all hope that the human race progresses beyond that, becomes an actual instrument of the living God, the master of all fates, the creator of all things, and the promoter of all good things, and in the end, the administrator of justice for all things. All bad things come to an end, supposedly, but not according to Rod Serling. In one of his, it's hard to pick a favorite Twilight Zone. It's easier to pick the ones that you don't like, that are kind of boring, that don't really fulfill the whole thing. And the one that he says, something about so-and-so, she learns the lesson that not all bad things come to an end. You know, I refer to Rod Serling as the Reverend Rod Serling, because if you notice, if you're a lover, if you're a fanatic of the Twilight Zone, then you notice the themes in his all of his stories are all good and evil, and evil may triumph right now, or bad may triumph, but it's because the person deserves it, not because, you know, pain and suffering is good. It's just that that's what they get. And so it's like Rod Serling is Gabriel or something, or he's the emissary of God. He's come down. Okay, this is the message I'm giving you. This is what's right and this is what's wrong. And if you do it this, and if you don't do it this way, you're going to slip into the Twilight Zone. And you may need to slip in the Twilight Zone to give you a couple of lessons to improve your life, such as, he says, so-and-so is, you know, he is a most unwelcome guest. But without that unwelcome guest, he would never enter the Twilight Zone. We'll be right back with the second half of this show.
The ship was the pride of the American side, coming back from some mill in Wisconsin. As the big freighters go, it was bigger than most, with a crew and a captain well seasoned.
Welcome back. Reading for fun, profit, and understanding. Call us in if you'd like to participate in the show. Offer reading selections to people, to the audience or to me at 602-277-5369 or 866-536-1100. I'd like to hear from you about what you've read, or what you would like me to ask me a question about, anything about reading or any books or authors that you might have a question about. If you also have a question or you want to know how to participate in the charity that I have, which is for helping all people, but especially children, but all people, with developing better reading skills and understanding of history. Now, you heard the advertisement for listening to Need to Read, and let me guide you in the adventures of reading for fun, profit, and understanding. It's important that we be able to get together and discuss the things that we read together, the common things that we all take and make part of our philosophy of life. And it's kind of like you know, the boy who cried wolf. And that's, if you read the whole tale, it's probably a lot more than just what we get in summation, where the boy cried wolf three times, and finally the fourth time the dog wouldn't come or something, or the people wouldn't come. And so the wolf ended up eating him, because it was the only time the wolf was really there. And then there's Of Mice and Men. That's a metaphor now for the simple one who's protected by his friend, but who is hated by the world, kind of like. Anytime you see someone who's weaker, there's always plenty who are going to want to pick on the weaker. So it's really important that we share all the stuff that we read, and all the knowledges, all the pieces of knowledge that we get, to pass it on to the next generation. It's so important, because as we can see in the world today, it's a really dire state. There is freedom in the world, and guaranteed mostly by the United States, and if the other free parts of the world would probably not be free if it wasn't for the existence of the United States. If we had never broken from Britain, and Britain had maintained its hold over this continent, would they have freed their colonies? Would they have let the Indians and all the other colonies that they've, they finally let go of the Chinese, finally let go of Hong Kong, which, you know, it was the wrong time to. Back before, it was the time to let people, but now those countries who that counted on, those areas that counted on Great Britain to be the protection against the tyranny of the Red Chinese, of the communists and the and others, they've been abandoned by the British. So it makes you suspect what's going on with the British. How much do they really care about freedom? Because it seems that their huge bank and insurance companies, you know, most all banking goes through London, and maybe through some other couple of places, Zurich and Stockholm maybe, or Sweden, whatever it is, and New York, and these control, those places control the finances of the entire world. So it's a horrible thing to think about, the way, why have the people of this earth been left to be mired in under the jackboot of tyranny. Just about everywhere else you go in the world, it's just not very nice. There's poverty, there's corruption in the government, the officials are corrupt, the police are corrupt. The basic local governments are halfway corrupt and strapped for cash, and it's just absolutely horrible. And why? Because governments oppress their people. When governments don't oppress their people and people are allowed to keep what they earn and not robbed by official taxation, you find that standards of living rise, everything, just like America. The reason we're here is not just because of our natural resources, because there's natural resources all over the earth. It's because we are allowed to pursue happiness and to keep the products of happiness that we have created, and not to be taken away from us because, oh, we have too much, or because some corrupt official wants it. And you know, it's a real shame, because I'm talking to my friend Luther, who came and stayed with me for several months and helped me finish the house in Coolidge and reestablished our relationship that had lapsed for 33 years. And then Luther went off and died last April. And that was a real shame, but he was the kind of person that always found the good in anything he could. And he was a very, very, very inspiring person, and he really inspired me while he was here to continue on with what I want to do. And we're experiencing that right now. There's nothing that I like more than sharing the experiences of reading and the written word and the things that I have learned from it. For instance, the history of the Lincoln assassination. There's a book by let's see, where is this here? It's by it's here somewhere. It's called The Lincoln Conspiracy, and it is a little bit different than some of the other writings about those times and what actually happened, who was involved in the conspiracy to kill Lincoln. Because, you know, it was really like, okay, here it is, The Lincoln Conspiracy by David Balsiger. That's Balsiger. Yeah, Balsiger. And also Charles E. Sellier, that's Sellier Jr. It was published in 1977, so it's already a pretty old book. But it gives a lot of information that I hadn't heard before. And it to my mind, the information that they presented tells me that Secretary of War, because it was called War and not Defense at that time, Secretary of War Stanton was in on the conspiracy to kill Lincoln. And it's maybe not, but he certainly was in on the conspiracy to conceal some of the evidence that took place and who else was involved in it, because he tore out 10 pages of Booth's daily diary, the diary that Booth kept even after the days, during the days he was on the run, those 14 days or whatever it was that he was on the run, until they finally caught him in that barn, and what was it, Dr. Mudd's barn. And he kept this daily journal. And Stanton got a hold of that, and when he turned it back over to the officials, the government, there was 10 pages missing. The last 10 pages were missing, gone, and they've never been found. It's quite a quite something else. So let's see here. Well, I was going to read something about Bobby and Gus, but there's no time for that right now. And you can always I can always read it next week maybe, or if you want, I'll send you a copy of it. I just make a copy on my machine and send it to you if you want. You can always contact me at needtoreadkfnx1100@gmail.com. needtoreadkfnx1100@gmail.com. Of course, you could contact Need to Read through the station, KFNX. And you can contact me at 602-725-6895 if you're interested in the best car wash or detail anywhere. I'm not saying that somebody else can't do just as good a job as we can, because, I mean, after all, it isn't rocket science. It's just washing cars. But so few will do it. Nobody can do any better, because I do, and my son, we do as good a job as could be done. But so few make the effort to do as good as we do. So if you need your car washed or detailed, if you need your paint buffed and or any kind of paint work done on it, my son's an expert on removing debris off the paint, polishing it up, bringing it back to his wonderful luster. You just give me a call at 602-725-6895. That's 602-725-6895. That's how you can get a hold of me for the car wash. It's how you can get a hold of me if you want to talk about my academy for critical thinking. If you want to talk about helping children study. If you're interested in having me read to your class or to anyone, if I will be glad to do that as well. So you can give me a call at 602-725-6895. And shortly I will have at least one copy of a book that I'll make myself and make a cover myself called Checking for Chucks in the Summertime, a guide to observing the elusive carrot chuckawalla in the wild. We'll be right back for the last segment of the show, Reading for Fun, Profit, and Understanding.
Sundown, you better take care if I find you've been creeping around my back stairs.
Welcome back. We were going to talk about a little bit of current events. I was once again listening to the commercial about my show, about the joys of reading, and how to interpret current events. And I must say that I haven't been doing a lot of reading about current events. I'm doing mostly listening, although I did read some newspaper and stuff. But current events, whether you read about them or you hear about them, it's all the same, because words are the way that we comprehend. And so, whether you hear it or you read it, you want to be able to say, is that true or is that not true? Did he say, and I'll give you a for instance, we're going to quote Barack Obama, the ultimate liar. I remember back when he said something about chemical weapons in Syria, and he goes, now, if they start using a whole bunch of chemical weapons, you know, and the reason he said a whole bunch is because he wanted to be able to say that he said a whole bunch, not just one or two. And then after it all came out and the fake healthcare program was passed, dubbed Obamacare, he came out and stuck his finger in the air and said, we said you could keep your plan if. And I suppose we were just supposed to ignore the fact that he said, you can keep your plan in doctor, period. And then he said afterwards, if. So, words, whether they're written or spoken, have to be properly comprehended to see what they really do mean. And something that happened today, or that's happened today, that happened, I think it was Thursday, or no, it was Friday. The Republicans, the spineless Republicans, decided that instead of forcing the vote late into the night, and declaring the president not guilty so that he could deliver the State of the Union address on Tuesday. I don't understand why the Republicans did that. I just cannot understand it. Why didn't they stay on into the wee hours of the night and take the vote Friday night? Why did they wait till Wednesday? Why? I think that's the biggest betrayal I've ever seen, but I'm sure it'll work out. I'm sure Trump will get up there and run his big mouth up there on the stage and tout all the great things he's done, and it ain't going to be anybody able to dispute him. You know, what are they going to say? That they don't like the economy? They don't like the unemployment? They don't like the new trade deals? They don't like any of that? None of that matters, because Trump says bad things about people, calls them names and stuff. That doesn't matter. That's what matters. But it's, I think it was one cowardly thing that the Republicans did, or whoever, maybe it was Mitch McConnell, I don't know. Anyway, Wednesday, not Friday like it should have been, not Friday night in the wee hours of the morning like it should have been, if that's what was necessary. I don't think any of that was necessary. They could have taken the vote Friday afternoon, and they could have just tabled all those stupid amendments they keep putting up. They just put those amendments up to create time, and they wanted to go. They wanted to make sure that Trump could not come and deliver the State of the Union speech after having been exonerated by the Senate. That's exactly what they wanted. And somehow the Republicans and their little wishy-washy spines let it happen. I just don't understand it. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's better this way. I can't see how, but anyway, that's enough of the politics, because that stuff is important. Yet it really, to the things that matter to the people who can't read, who don't have the solace of being able to sit down with reading material and throw themselves into something for learning, for just for fun, or for something really, really serious. That's the most important thing that a person can actually do, be able to sit down and read the thoughts of another person, or to write down their own thoughts, to write a letter and to somebody, and not using all this text and email shorthand and computer shorthand stuff, but actually write a real letter to somebody. And I think it's extremely important. And so for the last part of this show, just because this is really what this show is all about, is reading and comprehension, I'd like to just run through some reading materials that I've written down here and let everybody take it as it will. I've got quite a few books that like I said before, I could probably spend the whole hour listing the books and authors that I've read and why I've read them and why I recommend them. And in some point in time, maybe I'll do something like that. But just to start off with, we have an author called Taylor Caldwell. And now, she's a famous author from bygone time, probably the 40s, 50s, something, 60s. And she wrote a book. She's written a lot of books, and I liked most of her books. Some of them I didn't think were so great, but they were always at least worth reading, and they weren't something like you put down in the middle of it because you can't stand reading it any longer, that's for sure. None of her books were like that. But she wrote something called Ceremony of the Innocent. And it is probably one of the best analysis of the hypocrisy of the leftists. And how they supposedly care about the poor and the downtrodden and whatnot, when in fact that is all they care about is power. And Ceremony of the Innocent by Taylor Caldwell, an extremely important book. And then We the Living by Ayn Rand. Now, Ayn Rand is of course famous for The Fountainhead and Atlas Shrugged, and moderately famous for her little book called Anthem, I think. And then she writes a few short stories too. But We the Living is autobiographical. It's not actually her story, fact for fact, but it is her story as could be experienced through some other character. We the Living, the story of a woman's attempted escape from the tyranny of the Soviets. And in the end, unfortunately, her failure to escape. But she did die in the attempt. She refused to live under that tyranny and was willing to die as opposed to live under it. So she died in the attempt to escape. We the Living by Ayn Rand. A very important book. Much more important than Atlas Shrugged, actually. And Atlas Shrugged is an extremely important book because as crazy as Atlas Shrugged is, the whole plot line and all the characters and everything, Ayn Rand had a way of exposing the lies and hypocrisy of the left in that book, Atlas Shrugged. What would happen if Atlas said, no, I will not carry the world on my shoulders. No, I will not be the beast of burden for humanity. Atlas Shrugged. Here's a very important book, In God's Underground, by the Reverend Richard Rembrandt. And he also wrote another book called Tortured for Christ. And his wife, she also wrote a book about the years that she spent in prison and spent in poverty while her husband was in prison, both for the crime of preaching the Word of God in their church. And this is another horrible hypocrisy of the left, how they refuse to acknowledge the tyranny of the Soviets. Now they're starting to acknowledge that the Soviets were this way or that way, but never really get into just how bad they were. And certainly they do not ever have any regrets about the way they described the Soviets to the public throughout the years that the Soviets tortured and killed people and oppressed people. And Stalin, what, he murdered 20 million or something Ukrainians. Well, it probably wasn't 20 million, but it was a lot of them. And he murdered those people by starving them. So In God's Underground by the Reverend Richard Rembrandt. And he also wrote a book called Tortured for Christ. The Reverend Richard Rembrandt. And I would encourage everyone to read that book. And The Poisoning of Alexander, I can't say his last name, subtitled The Return of the KGB, Death of a Dissident. We're coming up to the end of the show. I want to thank you for listening. I want to encourage you to listen to the Article 5 Hour, a great show that I listen to as much as I can after I leave. And I want you to try to read some more, anything you can, and write to me at needtoreadkfnx1100@gmail.com. And I think we're coming down to the last visible. How about these two books? The Invisible Man by H.G. Wells and Invisible Man by Ralph Ellison. Two different books, but kind of